I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
Because, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence. If I got in far enough, I can reconstruct it.
Computers, the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
Everyone, welcome to the October 19th edition of the In the Now show. It's your host, Slipmode, in the house, along with my sidekick.
VR.
All right. Well, we're definitely going to come at you with another good show this evening, and I got a lot of things to talk about. How are you doing, VR?
I'm doing good, but you know, as you always say, we have something good to talk about. I'm just waiting for the proof of the pudding.
All right, proof of the pudding. All right. Well, here is an interesting story, because I like to cover kind of scientific news. I may not understand, you know, all the different concepts, but I can definitely get what they're trying to come across with, and I think this is a very interesting thing to speak about. I'm just going to read straight out, because it makes a lot more sense instead of me just summarizing it, because there's a lot of details. Perplexing observations beaming back by a NASA spacecraft are fueling debates about a mystery of biblical proportions. Is our universe infinite? Scientists have announced tantalizing hints that our universe is actually relatively small, with half of mirror's illusion tricking us into thinking that the space stretches on forever. However, work by a second team seems to contradict this. The scientists are now busy trying to resolve the conundrum, whether space is infinite or something people have been asking since ancient times and probably before that, says mathematician Jeffrey Weeks. If we resolve this and confirm that space is infinite, this would be an enormous step forward in our understanding of nature. Now, the center of debate are observations by NASA's Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe, WMAP, which was launched in 2001. The probe measures temperature ripples in the cosmic microwave background, the afterglow radiation from the Big Bang fireball. Astronomers are now interested in how strong different sizes of ripples are, as this reveals vital information about the early universe and might tell us how big the universe is today. Many astronomers suspect that the universe is infinite. In that case, the microwave background ripples should have an unlimited range of sizes. But when WMAP's observations of small-scale ripples have matched predictions for an infinite universe almost perfectly, the large-scale measurements have not. On the larger scales, the WMAP has shown that the ripples almost disappear. And basically, they have this idea that since the ripples are disappearing and they should be going on forever, that there is a point to where the universe stops. And what their theory is that there is basically what appears to be like the shape of a soccer ball, with, the soccer ball has those pentagon shapes on all sides of it, making up the ball. And what they say is that it's possible, and of course this is, probably in high debate, that once you enter one side of the decagon, if you get to that side of the universe, go through that boundary, you'll appear on the other side, the exact opposite other side, and just keep going through. And so it's a very interesting theory, and if they could actually prove that it's true, they said that they could try to scan possibly the edges of the universe to be able to find where some of these creases are in those pentagons. And I think their estimation of what the universe is in here is 70 billion light years across. Well, if there is an edge, we're definitely not going to get to it.
Well, yeah, well, we won't do it in, with our kind of propulsion technology, but the, it does, there's a lot of already foundational groundwork laid out by this, like Einstein's theories of relativity, actually, not the relativity itself, but the other implications that are a part of his theories, is that if you were to go out far enough, you would come back to where you started. And that has it in. And then there have been some observations of the of what galaxies are doing is they're actually accelerating as the temperature, you know, the average temperature of the universe is actually decreasing, which without, in an infinite universe, that is extremely paradoxical. But with this kind of universe, it actually makes sense because now they're starting to pull, the gravitational pull upon each other is actually accelerating them. And so the idea of a big crunch is much more plausible.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, you know, that in our time we're getting more information about things like that. I mean, even being able to see as far as we can in space. So, you know, maybe true. Maybe, you know, things like wormholes are true that we've been speaking about. And, you know, you see on television shows and stuff like that. So it's a very interesting age. Obviously, you know, this is the very beginning of these types of discoveries, just like electronics and stuff. You know, their very beginning was, you know, a few hundred years ago, and maybe even farther back than that. But some real progress has been made in the last few hundred years. And maybe we can make, you know, similar progress. Obviously, not in that... it's a much grander project, but definitely in our lifetimes, we're going to be able to see some pretty amazing things, I think.
Well, one of the neat implications of having, like, the difference between a finite universe and an infinite one is that there's this greater control or greater force that, you know, unless we can find some just miraculous way, we're all going to come to an end, because if the universe comes down to a big crunch, how the heck are we going to avoid that? You know, are we going to be able to step out of the box of the universe to save ourselves?
Yeah, see, that's another thing. I mean, you know, to really answer the questions of the universe, you know, you'll be able to, if you're within the universe, my belief is that you'll be able to discover about the universe. But in order to discover what the universe is, we really would have to see beyond it to understand what that is, to then clarify what the universe really is. And that may be something that we're never, you know, what might ever be possible for us to ever accomplish, is to be able to do that. And that's, I mean, just that statement alone, to even think about trying to do that is just, is way out there.
Yeah, but that's one of the reasons why we do go and search out, you know, these kind of bounds of the universe. Because, like, the Hindu ideology of the universe is, like, when you step away from the universe, the sound that the orb makes is all... Well, if you're outside the universe, being able to hear the sound or feel the vibration, where are you?
And that is the question that we'll answer on the next In the Now show.
That's right. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Download again.
Yeah. yeah, interesting stuff. I got something else here. I haven't heard an article this insane in a long time.
Oh, wow.
Look at that. You see that title?
Wait.
See that title right there?
Oh, what the?
Yeah, okay, here, I'm going to read this out. These parents sue a school over their use of Wi-Fi because they think it's going to affect their children. Hello? Cell phones, power lines, radio signals, microwaves? It's a little too late, bub. All right. A pioneering elementary school district outside Chicago has been sued for installing a wireless computer network by parents worried that exposure to the network's radio waves could harm their children.
Well, and they probably started the suit by calling their lawyer on their cell phone.
Yeah. According to the complaint, within, you know, a few feet of their child. According to the complaint, was filed last month in Illinois State Court. Parents of five children asserted that a growing body of evidence outlines serious health risks that exposure to low-intensity but high radio frequency radiation poses to human beings, particularly children. The Oak Park Elementary School District set up a wireless network to connect to its schools to one another in 1995. Long before such networks became widely popular, the spokeswoman said for the district, who is Gail Krantz, said it complies with all government regulations for wireless networks.
Right on. Well, also, you know, that's, you know, no worse. Actually, it should be no worse than a microwave.
Yeah. So, you know, the school's response is too bad. So
yeah.
Sad.
Right on.
And, I mean, in all honesty, come on. There's already, you know, I'm sitting here right now, and there's obviously, like, at least, you know, maybe 1,000 phone calls beaming through my head right now. You know, microwave use in the other room. You know, I got cell phone here. I got a computer monitor in front of me. I got microprocessors around me. A stereo. You know, it's...
Well, and not counting all the billions of, like, neutrons that are coming up through you that are going through the Earth.
Yeah. Yeah, we're screwed.
And all the, you know, the other cosmic and solar radiation.
Yeah. Oh,
great stuff.
So, I mean, in all honesty, we've taken this, we've already taken the jump to using all this crap. And, you know, I'm not saying that there isn't any side effects, but...
No, because we've already seen some side effects and possible side effects.
Well, yeah. And it's not...
We've chosen to, like, proliferate this technology without the full, you know, comprehensive understanding, but we've always done that. We always have to do that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's always on the shelf.
Well, I mean, in all... You know, you can't say that there isn't any... you know, danger to it, but the danger is probably about as dangerous as using aspirin, and everybody uses aspirin. Not everybody, but I mean, you know, it's
if you drink the water, you use the power, then, you know, unless you want to actually go live out in the wilderness, but oh, then you're still breathing some of the particulates that have blown away from the cities, and you're still being exposed to mutagens and carcinogens and different unnatural chemical compounds and
yeah. And don't drive your car because it's more unsafe to drive a car than it is to have a Wi-Fi network around your house.
Well, yeah, because you're almost guaranteed. You know, well, you know, I forget what the percentages of what your chances is are that you will die in your car.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's a little bit higher than Wi-Fi networks taking you down, buddy.
Yeah.
So. I don't know, pretty ridiculous. You know, that's the problem, the abuse of the law. To me, I think that's abuse, you know, these phony lawsuits and stuff like that, get these pathetic, you know, when they win, they get these pathetic laws or amendments, you know, written in, and it really tears things apart. You know, there's abuse of freedom. You know, you have the freedom to have that lawsuit, but, you know, sometimes things like that and other things, if, you know, it went forward... That freedom can actually abuse other freedom-loving people, and
yeah. Well, there is actually a frivolous lawsuit law in this great state. This great state.
Okay. All right.
And that if the judge rules that your lawsuit is frivolous, you have to pay for the plaintiff's all the lawyer fees.
Yeah.
And filing fees. Oh, it's great.
You know, we're sitting here chatting. I'm just going to put this one story aside. I want to talk about Kill Bill.
What about Kill Bill?
Okay, VR hasn't seen Kill Bill. I saw Kill Bill last night. I'm going to tell you my feelings about Kill Bill. Okay? It's a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Which should be good, because it's like his third project.
Fourth.
Yeah. Yeah, so it should be good.
Should be. And that's one of the main reasons I brought it. I love Pulp Fiction. I was like, cool, it's going to be kind of cool like that. So I went in. And basically, make the story real short, there's a person that wants revenge, and they want revenge on five different people. And so the whole story is about this person and going about getting revenge on these five different people. They have a list that she marks off once she's killed the person. And so it's a lot of kung fu when they're fighting, a lot of cool moves. A lot of weird camera angles, a lot of weird...
From the preview, it kind of looked like a little bit of a spoof.
Like a Fight Club, kind of.
Well, kind of a spoof off of, like, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, like The Matrix.
Yeah,
And a few other of the great movies.
So that's one thing. I was like, it's copying other things. And then some of the things it did, in my opinion... You know, that you're like, oh, that's supposed to be cool cinematography, you know, not just stunts, but just the way it came across, changing colors or something like that, and camera views and how they showed the story. And to me, it wasn't, you know, wasn't all that exciting. And so I'm sitting here watching, and at the beginning they had this fight, and I was like, okay, cool. You know, the first person she had to battle, and I was like, well, that's really cool, you know. And that was kind of interesting. And then I went to the second one, and then the second one, you know, was all right. It just, some of the moves are just ridiculous, and some of the, and the abilities to where she saved her ass to not being getting killed during the fight was not even close to being probable. And then the third fight, she takes on, like, I don't know, 60 samurais or whatever, beats them all with one sword, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm like, come on, give me a break. No way. But I'm sitting there watching it anyways, because I usually wait till the end to make all my critiques, which it's already over, so I'm making them now. And then after the third one, she marks it off, and, you know, it's getting closer, and you're thinking she's finally going to get to Bill. And Bill's five, okay? She's finally going to get there. Boom, credits. Here come the credits. Here come the frickin' credits. And I'm like, what the hell? I was like, I just sat here. I saw this unbelievable, insane, non-realistic kung fu. Of course, other movies had it. But this was terrible. You know, taking out like 60 samurais all by herself. And this is supposed to be like some woman, you know, that's not supposed to... I don't know. They didn't say she's going to be extraordinary.
Yeah, it's not like the Matrix predisassumption or anything.
Yeah,
like
they trained and all this crap. And plus, they're in a computer world, and they're able to, like, you know, study and pick up all these things, like, instantaneously, and then go into the Matrix and do stuff. I mean, this is supposed to be in the real world. And I was like, you know, in all honesty, you can't keep movies to, like, you know, realistic boundaries. That's totally a misnomer. You know, obviously, you can say, like, hey, Slip, you can't really do that to movies because that's what they're like. But just watch it. Or, you know, actually don't watch it. But, I don't know, do whatever you want to do.
I'm probably going to watch it just because you've built it so bad that it can't, I know.
See,
it can't be as bad as,
see, that's the problem.
As you've said it is now.
See, that's the problem. If I say it sucks, people are going to watch it. If I don't say anything, people are going to watch it to see if it sucks or not. Or they're going to see it's a Quentin Tarantino movie. But basically, they're going to see this movie, and it's going to suck because it's not going to offer you anything new over any other movie. You can go watch a kung fu movie and have more excitement than that. And then it ends in the middle of the frickin' movie. I mean, what the hell is that? I honestly was sitting there. I was like, oh, this is some sort of trick. You know, it's fake. They're going to bring the movie back. I honestly thought it was some sort of thing. I'm like, yeah, it's the first time somebody put credits in. The audience is like, oh. And all of a sudden the movie comes back, and they're like, oh, man, there's this part in the movie. Do you think the credits are on? It's cool. No, it's over. It's it. And the next one comes out in February. And then they finish off the other two. Dude, half the movie was fighting all those 60 ninja guys. And that was it, a whole scene.
Oh, there's actually going to be a sequel to it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it cuts right in the middle of the movie, and then they're going to have the sequel in February to finish it up. Originally, it was a five-hour movie, and they sliced it.
Well, yeah, a five-hour movie. Like, I love movies, but I wouldn't be able to sit through a five-hour movie.
But I know that. I mean, you know, honestly, you can't sit through all three Lord of the Rings, but I mean...
Well, they actually are playing that somewhere.
Well, Well,
I still wanted to go to that, but that would have been 12 hours.
Well, it's not out yet, because they don't have the third one out yet. Oh, but isn't there supposed to be a special one?
Yeah, there's a special one.
I can't believe that. I don't think I'll be able to go that, but I'd love to. But I just cannot believe it. I really thought that this was an embarrassment. This was a ripoff to the viewers of movies. I thought it was a total ripoff, because they're taking you for a fool, you know. I mean, if I had Hollywood's money, I could go ahead and put this type of thing together. It's all about putting the right people in the right places. And you make them do all the stuff, you know, and honestly, you know, you want to be comparative to all the other movies that are out there. And you're like, well, there's this cool stuff, but I mean, like, you know, other movies do it, so now this guy isn't really doing anything special. It's not going over the top. And the story wasn't that good. There's just some guy named Bill she wants to kill, just get back at him, and you know, kills these people, and it's just, you know... It's all these things where people, like, heave these complex ideas together and these, like, cultural things and put it all together. So people are like, you know, there's so many different things involved. They're going to be like, whoa, that's cool.
Yeah, because it just completely blows their mind.
Yeah. But in honesty, you can look at it and you're like, no, that gets kind of cheesy because, well, I mean, honestly, it was done to make me feel that way. But then if you take everything and look at how it's all mixed together, then you're like, well, you know, it's not like somebody else couldn't have done this. And the story really isn't even that good. So, and I'm sick of movies trying to copy The Matrix. The only movie that's not trying to copy The Matrix that is just as good is Lord of the Rings. That's right.
Yeah, because that's a completely different thing, but the still the grandeur of it is amazing.
Yeah, it's right there. I don't know. I'm mad. I couldn't believe it.
Right here in a few years, those will be only a couple of movies that I'll watch.
You know, and when I get out of the theater, I like looked at somebody and I said, what the hell was that? And he's like, yeah, man, that is crap. And there's a lot of people totally disappointed. They're like, ugh. I couldn't believe it.
So I'm, yeah, probably when I go watch it, I'm going to demand my money back when I get out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, hold on. I went to the manager. And I said, have you seen Kill Bill? And she said, no. And I said, has anyone here seen Kill Bill? Just a vouch. Has anyone else seen Kill Bill? I was like, yeah, I saw it. I'm like, that movie is pathetic. And I was like, seriously, I want my money back. I can't believe I saw that movie. I can't believe it. I saw this movie, and it was nothing, and then it got stopped in the middle of the movie, and you expect me to be like, okay, I got something out of it? And she's like, oh, I'm sorry, you know, that's what it says. It's going to be a sequel, so it's in the previews. It's not going to be like that, and I'm not,
no,
you know.
It's not in the previews of it, because I had no idea.
I had no idea either. So I don't know. You know, and she didn't give me my money back, and I was like, forget it. You know, I'm not going to cause a scene beyond what I already did, and it was pretty upsetting. Upsetting.
Yeah, I can see that. I kind of get your anger, like when I saw, was it the Flintstones, the movie?
Oh.
Yeah, I kind of get that vibe.
Some people are kind of, I haven't seen the Hulk, some people are like that about the Hulk. I don't know.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen that one.
I thought Spider-Man was pretty good.
Oh, that was a great movie. Really enjoyed that.
Okay. All right. On to some more stuff. All right. Well, in the past we talked about this company called Eolus. I hope I pronounce it right. And basically they had patented this technology that allows you to run applications inside Internet Explorer. Well, Microsoft was doing that, and they had sued Microsoft, and they had won the suit. And here's the news. The Eolus patent infringement victory has rattled the web since it is handed down in August. In its verdict, a jury found that Microsoft's Internet Explorer browser infringed on an Eolus patent that describes how a browser opens external applications of the type Macromedia, Adobe Systems, Real Networks, Apple Computers, Sun Microsystems, and many other software providers' product. Microsoft and the plug-in vendors aren't the only ones who are losing sleep over Eolus. The web designers or developers face the possibility of having to significantly rewrite their pages or strip them of common use technologies like Macromedia's Flash and other browser makers, including Opera software. And two open-source development projects relied upon by companies like Hewlett-Packard and Apple also face an uncertain future in terms of their plug-in technologies. Luik at Eolus would still permit Microsoft to distribute IE as long as it's being used in conjunction with the application provider or a corporate intranet that has an Eolus plug-in license. So far, Eolus has not granted any such licenses.
And what good is that doing them?
You know, I don't know. I don't know which side to take. I mean, I know that, you know, there could be, you know, people that are trying to hit Microsoft because they have a lot of money, and they say, you know, they want to get something patented before they do. And I'm sure, you know, cases like this or other cases in the past have, you know, caused companies to examine everything they have and hurry up and get patents for it so nobody comes in and takes a lot of money. So, you know, I don't know if it's hooray for Eolus, hooray for Microsoft, or feel sorry for them, or what, but basically, I don't know. I mean, Microsoft's been screwing a lot of other people over, so, I mean, you know, I guess I could take it from that point that, you know, maybe they got hit for something that's a good thing. I don't really know what to take on it, but it's definitely going to be affecting how the next versions of Internet Explorer, which they said they're no longer developing, so maybe how Internet Explorer is released, possibly, a modified 6.0.
Yeah, I just have a hard time understanding why they want to make it even more, like, exclusive and those sorts of technologies, you know, more. Because you have to pay for it and you have to, you know, have everything patented on it. And going, everything works much better if everybody can use the same thing and it's, you know, information flows faster, it's easier, it's more efficient. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Well,
especially,
I mean,
when if they had to do it, it would change everything that pretty much already exists.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I know that people want to come up with an innovative software idea, and they want to create it and make money off it. And, you know, honestly, I don't think that's bad. I mean, I like the open source model better just because of its benefits. But, you know, I'm not going to kick anybody that's making money off their piece of software. As long as they're not doing dirty business tricks, you know, I guess there's some level of dirty business tricks you just need to get used to because that's business, but there's some that could affect a lot of people, and that's then that's getting a little too far. But, you know, I don't really mind the fact that they have, you know, software that's out there like that. But it is good that now we have a pretty viable alternative, and other alternative seems to be springing up. So, I don't know. The world of computing and software has definitely changed and is continually changing, and it's going to evolve very rapidly. In 10 years, it could be very, very, very different than where it is now.
Yeah, that could be really neat. That could be really scary and really neat all at the same time.
I guess I can discuss a small story about the fact that, well, I am now doing some work from home. And I needed to be able to send docs to, you know, Microsoft Office users. So I tried OpenOffice, and I made a and it's a really nice Office suite. And, of course, it especially works well if you're sending docs to other OpenOffice people. But I had created with the newest, it was 1.10, and I had created a pretty decent size complexity of a spreadsheet. And I brought it over to Microsoft and Microsoft Office in Excel. And I opened it up, and for the most part, everything was there. Some of the cell sizing was off, a few other small little things, and I was able to fix it in a few moments. So it's not a bad thing, and it's going to be evolving. So I really hope, you know, that that gets to a level to be very, you know, have a very good competition with Microsoft Office. But in the meantime, I needed to be able to use Microsoft Office. Kind of sucks, huh? But sorry, I mean, I had to do it. I can't make the rest of the world conform right now, even though I'd like to. And I found this piece of software. It's kind of like the software that's used in Windows. And this software is based off Wine, which is the Windows emulator for Linux and other operating systems. And it's basically from CodeWeaver, and this one's called Crossover Office Crossover. I have another one called, I think it's Plugin Crossover. The Plugin Crossover allows you to run plugins that would run for Internet Explorer and Windows, run those types of plugins inside of, like, Mozilla Netscape. And then the one that I was trying, the software's a 30-day free trial, and then it's $50 if you actually have to, you know, if you want to purchase it. And I'm on the free trial, and it allows me to run pretty common, you know, applications that are over on Microsoft's platform, Photoshop, Quicken, you know, QuickBooks, all the offices, you know, Visio, things like that, Project. And so I ran that, and I installed Office 2000, and installed well, and it ran well. And so far it works pretty good. So the reason I'm bringing this up is that if somebody ever really needed to, like, I have a friend, for instance, this will be a perfect example, that he really enjoys Linux, and he doesn't per se need Windows at his environment. He has a few, maybe one or two programs that are actually custom written by a programmer that run in Windows, and they like to steer away from it because of the costs, the limitations, some of the licensing models, and they wanted to, you know, they'd like to move to Linux. So I tipped him off this software, and I think he's going to try it out. And they need to run at least Office or Photoshop, and they're going to test it out and see if it works. So if you know, it's not an all open source operating system solution, but it's a way to get away.
It's also a bridge.
It's a bridge, and it's you know, there's Windows out there. You can get Windows. I don't know how good Windows is. I haven't tried it. As far as, like, the Linux operating system, I'm really concerned more about a Linux operating system. This is just a tool to add on, and I don't know how well of a Linux operating system Windows is. But I thought that I would bring that up and let people know that, you know, if you really, really have to get over and you want to try to get over to Linux as fast as possible and do as much as you can, you know, don't think you have to stay on Windows or have, you know, a dual boot to go into it when you need to start using those applications, because a lot of those applications are supported to run on Linux via this software, and I'm sure Windows and other software. So that's something to try out.
Yeah. Well, that would make it a whole lot more cost-effective as well.
Yeah, yeah, because you don't have the OS fees and stuff like that. So it's $50 for this, and then, of course, you can buy your Office software or whatever at their bloated price. And
well, and then you have more choice, more opportunity of what you want to do, and you still are being able to connect with the rest of the world.
Yeah. So.
Sounds like a good deal.
Yeah. All right.
But I will have to say it was pretty frightening when I saw that you actually had, like, you know, Windows.
Yeah.
The Word on your machine.
Yeah. I was showing VR earlier. I said, you want to see something really evil? And he was like, sure, fine. And I started launching it, and I said, well, here you go. There's Word, and here's Internet Explorer running. And, hey, I wasn't trying to run Internet Explorer. It just comes with the Office install, okay?
I was kind of horrified when that started.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It was pretty funny.
All right. The next story up for grabs here is I've read something more about this in a few other articles, and it's technology that's coming on the scene. And basically the title of this story is Who Needs the Phone Company? When the University of Arkansas wanted to trim the cost of the intranet or the intra-campus calls by bypassing its local carrier by combining two technologies, voice over IP and 802.11 wireless. By using its technologies, by using existing TCP/IP networks and spending $4 million for a Cisco call manager, the university circumvented its local carrier and reduced monthly service fees from $530,000 to a mere $6,000. Meanwhile, the city of Dallas eliminated circuits altogether. It standardized an IP network and expects to cut costs of internal calls by $21 million over the next decade.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't have this article, the one, other one I read in front of my face, but basically I read another article that, and as far as security goes, I mean, this is something to really watch for. I have a friend that's actually implementing these type of things over at a hospital that he works at, and they use voice over IP over Wi-Fi, and doctors and people run around with these phones that are basically like cell phones, but they're connected to the phone network at the hospital. So if you call a doctor, you can always get a hold of that person wherever they're at. He or she doesn't have to go to a phone or anything like that. They can pick up the phone right there and dial in the network. They're talking about the technologies of, you've got these access points, and what happens when you leave one area of access point to another one? You know, does the phone call get dropped? And there's software and hardware out there that basically allows you to roam and jump from access point to access point while you're on the phone call, and it doesn't drop. So it's a new technology. It's been around for, I think, a year and a half, and in its infancy, and it's going to be taking off, and you're going to see, eventually my belief is that you're going to see the entire United States phone network turn into voice over IP, and everything's going to be through the internet structure. Of course, whenever you move from one system to another, especially since it's a largely used system, they always keep some sort of remnants of the old system around, which is a smart move.
Yeah, because it's a good backup and redundancy, especially for such an important infrastructure.
Yeah, and plus, since it's already there, there's no reason to just take it out. You know, just leave it there. But you can grow to another one. So, something to come, something that's going to be out there.
But I smell some security and some privacy issues here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, with anything, okay, like, if you watch these Japanimes of, like, the future worlds and stuff like that, and everyone, you see things like RFID tags, you know, when you go to stores, everything, you just go through, bloop, everything comes up on the screen, you move your hand or your little wand or your card, and it pays for it, and you go somewhere else, you get in your car, that automatically drives you, it's on GPS, it can unlock the car door from you, it can tell you if it's stolen, it can go find it if it needs to. You come into this house that has all these preset, things, and you're accessing the friendly local network server that that basically serves up applications. You don't have a PC anymore. It's basically back to the terminal days. You got a nice 21-inch flat screen monitor, a 42-inch plasma on the wall that you're accessing the internet through, which just is a fiber connection back to this, you know, network office that holds your private files. You know, you do your taxes, you do your banking, you do your bill pay, you do your investments, you do everything over this thing, and it's all tracked, logged, monitored. People can get onto it. If federal agents want to, you know, investigate somebody, it's a snap. You know, everything will be tracked to a degree. I mean, that's terrible. That's where it's going.
It seems like this blissful, like, utopia at the same time. It's so scary because especially with stuff that in the future, you know, things that could be worse and more limiting than the Patriot Act can come along and be like, oh, you know, you visited this site or you downloaded this and this and this. And by having those three things, you're now, you know, a malcontent. You're a terrorist kind of thing.
What was that movie? They had a movie that was exactly like that where they had, it wasn't Denzel Washington. It was, they had this movie where they're in the future and it was like that. And they had this cop from the old world trying to chase down this killer from the old world because they were cryogenically frozen and one of them woke up.
Demolition Man.
Yeah, Demolition Man. And that's it. Every time he cussed, all of a sudden this little printer next to him printed out a fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And people didn't envision that because they didn't think it was going to happen. They think it'd make a cool movie. They're like, hey, watch out for this.
Yeah, that's and that's the thing. That's we can do that. Or we will be able to on a wide scale.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about, it's a pretty scary world sometimes. It may not be impacting you at this point in time. You know, as the change goes, you'll be finding that people will move to new things, leave other things behind. Some of the things we're being leaving behind is some of our freedoms that, you know, some people didn't realize because they're like, hey, that's cool, let's go do that. Or like, terrorists might come, so we need to let this law happen. You know, so they're moving to this other thing. So they're moving to the safety, they're moving to the ease,
security,
the security, and then basically they're giving up all their freedoms and rights. And that's what we've talked about many a times. You know, we've talked about the Patriot Act being used against common criminals or nothing terrorism related. And that's not what it was intent was for, but it's being used as that. And obviously I think they need that ahead of time. And obviously, you know, things were thrown in that shouldn't have been thrown in, that were thrown in because they wanted to have that power and they knew the American public was going to pass on it. So,
yeah. And one of the great things that how things were, you know, like we were never, you know, never invaded. Except for during the beginnings of our country, because well now, let's say if a country came over and tried to invade us, they would know that there's 270 million Americans and possibly they're all armed.
Wow,
that's a really great deterrence right there.
Yeah, I don't know. They're working on taking assault rifles away, but the NRA is trying to not have it. I don't know. The NRA is pretty bad organization at times, but we should have our weapons.
Well, at the same time, it's that
I don't know if we need assault rifles, maybe semi-automatic. But
it's kind of like, well, if the my belief of the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms, is really to protect the First Amendment, our right to vote and free speech. So, who are we really trying to protect that from? Other countries? No. It's from ourselves and our own government. And when the reason why we still have the right to vote is because we can, cause a revolution and take them out. And that's really what a vote is you can completely, rechange the government every 4 years. And if we are not allowed that, then we can go in there and take it out physically.
Yeah, I think I remember reading once when I was reading these things about Albert Einstein. I think he had a quote once where he basically said something to the effect of, if just 10% of the society were organized and gave an uprise to something, that they would actually get their way.
Oh, yeah. Really easily.
So, or you could create, just think of if you had 10% of each state, doing something, you can create chaos pretty easily. So, all right.
And probably throughout the world.
Yeah.
Well, it might only have to be up to like 20% for the entire world.
Yeah. So, I don't know, what do you do with all this knowledge that we're talking about? What do you do with that? I don't. You just think about it. And when it gets to a point where it's unbearable, we need to go someplace else.
The only time that I come out of my closet is to do the In the Now show.
Yeah. Actually, this is in my closet, so you're welcome to my closet, VR.
Oh, I know. That's why I'm here, because I just go from one closet to the other.
You're getting too stinky, and then you came over to mine. Yeah. I just watched, so you're safe. So, what do you do with that? What do I do with it? I guess I just sit on it and think about it, and once it becomes unbearable, then maybe I'll get out of Dodge, and or maybe something will happen where a change might come about.
Well, there's this really neat thing. It's kind of a part of being living in a free society that you can die at any time, and it's kind of exhilarating and at the same time.
I don't know what brought that up, but
no. Just if, you know, we legislate ourselves to be so safe and so secure that quite a bit of our human or, you know, animal selves that still exist and play a role in our everyday lives will become even more bored and fight clubs might start popping up more and more often.
Yeah. You know, some of those movies like that, and some people believe that The Matrix was a wake-up call. You know, some people believe that movies like The Fight Club are actually there to initiate that, you know, and who knows.
But at the same time, it's kind of one of the main, you know, like the media, like the, you know, all the media that we do, you know, partake in every day is one of the things that shifts our ideologies to the way that, in a way that a lot, you know, that we're more accepting of giving away our freedoms. And then to have that same kind of medium come around and try to wake us up, that's already put us to sleep for most of our lives. It's almost, you know, not applicable.
Yeah. You know, there is, oh, man. Well, all right. I got all these stories sitting here, but here's some of the things I was thinking about lately. All right. For instance, you know, when we have like a president come in or a governor or whatever, and they want to talk about all these things they want to fix, okay? They want to fix these things. They need to be fixed. The deficit needs to be fixed. Healthcare, taxes, we need to fix all that. We need to make sure that people are getting their budgets. Okay, it seems like whenever America thinks they need to do something, you know, like really written out right away, something that's really affecting America, they do it. Billions of dollars for the war, billions of dollars for, you know, to save the airline companies, you know, all this money to, you know, resurrect the Twin Towers, things like that get pulled out. I mean, all this money. Why can't they pull out the $1 million that the school district needs? Why can't, you know, we get an upgrade here? Why can't, you know, people figure out their budgets? Why do these simplistic problems that seem to not ever get solved? And I mean, I'm not suggesting that it's possible to solve all of them, but I'm saying that when you have a group of people and they're sitting there and they're like, okay, something's happening and we need to have this thing fixed, and it's really going to cause, you know, a negative impact in this area, okay? Why doesn't someone come in, evaluate, and be like, yeah, you're right, okay? The system's broken in this area. We have this problem. We need to go fix it, okay? At the local level, and it seems to not happen. But if it's affecting all these companies and everything else, then it'll come out and happen. Now, what I'm trying to explain is kind of hard to explain. I said that just a second ago. The thing I'm really trying to say is that I think, in my mind, I have this belief that these things that are actually brought about to be discussed are almost like fake. They're just like made up to be like the things they want the public to talk about. But behind the scenes, it's not like they really want the deficit to be cleared, because if we had the deficit cleared, then people would be like, well, why can't we get this done? Why can't we get this done? Why can't we get this done? And they would use the fact that deficit is not there to be able to get things done. But people can have...
Well, then they would create more of a deficit because, oh, now we're back to zero. Let's spend some more money.
Yeah, so you got to keep it in that area, you know. And then taxes, you know, sometimes they're going to have it high. Sometimes they're going to have it low. It's this thing, you know, that they play with these things. I'm like, okay, cool, we'll have it high this week. Okay, cool, we'll have it low this week, year or whatever, you know. But in all honesty, I think the things that really go on behind the scenes are the people that can make those decisions for things that are going on. They make the decisions the way they see fit, and they put these other things in front of your face and make you worry about those, even though in the background they're handling their real agenda.
When those aren't the real issues that affect all our lives.
Yeah.
Those are the superfluous, you know, niceties that we all can all revel around.
Yeah, we feel like we're voting. We feel like we're being free. You know, in my opinion, I think that not in all points, but I think at sometimes this idea that we have freedom is being used against us. Like,
well, then I really have been. You know, I've thought about all these terms that keep being thrown around. What is freedom? What is liberty? What is a conservative? What is a liberal? You know, all these things. And, like, freedom is not paying taxes on stuff or being overtaxed. It's nothing to do. When most politicians talk about freedom, they're really talking about liberty. And we don't, you know, see it anymore. What is liberty? It's the ability to move for room and food and space and, you know, to do and think what we want, as long as we don't rob somebody else of their ability to do the same.
Yeah, so we have these freedoms and liberties, and to some degree, of course, the government or powers to be won't step on certain ones because America would be like, hey, what's that? You know, sometimes they have, but, you know, they're not going to make it apparent. And what I'm saying is that, you know, you have the sense of freedom. You know, you can tout that you're better than somebody else. Some people like doing that. Some people, you know, like the comfort of thinking that we're the best nation and that we're free. We'll be able to do this. And if somebody else comes over and says, hey, you guys are bad, you do that. And we're like, no, you know what? We do this and you guys don't do that. You know, and that kind of stuff, at some degree, at some point in time, I agree that people have been taking advantage of that kind of thing and thinking like, well, Americans will be happy as long as you can, as long as they can do that, we can do this to them. And we can pass this over on them, and we can do that, you know?
And then we're subject to the shifting baseline of that, you know, every little thing, you know, changes what we're used to.
Yeah.
And then, well, we can do without that.
Yeah, we can go a little further. We'll give them this, and they'll be happy, and we'll take away that. We'll give them this, and then we'll take away that. And then you're moving away, and I think that we've totally moved away from where our, you know, the forefathers have really wanted us to be. If they saw some of the types of tracking and things like that, they would definitely not agree.
Oh, they would be horrified.
Yeah. You know, not to say that maybe they're politicians and they jump on the bandwagon too, but...
Oh, no, because they were businessmen. Because that's the whole reason why the whole, you know, Constitution and the Union formed was for trade. And for communication and regulation of that trade, and kind of to unify ourselves away from England, which was just sucking the excess
life
value,
blood.
Well, the excess value from the Americas. But at the same time, that little bit that they were taking from the, you know, from the massive amounts of resources that we have now, was enough for them to start a revolution.
You just described Cuba. Where Fidel, this is a side note, Fidel asked the Americans, because all the American companies are there using their lands, and said, like, hey, you know, we'd like to get some of this money here, you know, put Cuban workers in there, something like that, so we can get something out of this. You're just in there using our land. Americans said, nah, forget it. No, we're not going to do that. Sorry, we don't need it. Thanks, bye. And then they said, Fidel said, okay, well, I'll just nationalize the land. Sorry, guys, you guys got to get out of town. We own the land. You got to get out. Sorry, goodbye. And then the United States responded and said, all right, well, you're just not going to be able to do any trade with us. So goodbye, see you later. Adios, no trade with us. And that's a long story. Then the Soviets came in to help them out and this whole strategic thing, and then the Cuban Missile Crisis and all that stuff. But, you know, we didn't like them for trying to take their control of their country and moving on.
Oh, yeah, that we had the power to be England once again, and, oh, we took it.
So
because we forget about what actually we, you know, the ideology that we were founded upon.
So, I don't know. I don't think we should go anymore with that.
I think this is where, I was kind of seeing where this could go, is, like, my definition of a Democrat is somebody who believes that they can do it better themselves. And a Republican is one that thinks that somebody else can do it better themselves. And most of us are really Republicans by that definition. Why? Because we don't actually go out and get our hands dirty and volunteer and, you know, like, try to go down to the schools and volunteer and make the schools better, or whatever your issue is. You know, put your hand into it. Put some of your, you know, extra value into it. And the change of the world will be phenomenal by each hand that gets involved.
Yeah, it's just, it's hard, dude. That's what I was like, man, we've discussed so many things. I don't know where I'm going to take it. I think I'm just going to leave it at that. So.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah. All right, back to the stack of stories with 48 minutes already into the show. all right.
Well, you know what? I think we could just cut to the credits now and leave those to the sequel next, in 2 weeks.
Well, actually, we'll have a lot of news stories then. Well, here's a few stories about Microsoft. To the extent of people are contemplating switching because of some of the problems. And I'm going to be discussing some of the problems that have come about and why people may want to be switching. For instance, Israel's Ministry of Commerce suspended all Microsoft contracts through 2004 because he has labeled them a monopoly.
Ooh.
So, basically, there will be, I don't know, what exactly the suspension of contracts, saying that, you know, maybe we're stopping payment, we're going to evaluate our situation with you, but basically it's a major, shift in the Israeli government about their take on Microsoft in their country.
Yeah, because most countries don't like monopolies.
No.
Unless it's the government. Because that's an okay monopoly.
Yes.
That's an orderly monopoly, but other than that, it's...
You want small government.
Yeah.
Okay, Microsoft's execs, basically this is a story about Longhorn not being shipped till possibly 2006. Now, supposedly they're doing a lot of different things with Longhorn, and basically some of those things are, actually if I look it up really quick, I think they're trying to do a lot of incorporation of things with other companies, a lot of working together with lots of other parties, to create things for their digital rights management and things like that. Actually, here. Each year we hear more and more and can't live without features that would be baked into Longhorn. The ultimate in security, next-generation security computing base, a.k.a. Paladin, Longhorn self-healing, self-managing systems. The infrastructure will be baked into Longhorn. A simpler Windows presentation infrastructure. Just hang on for Longhorn, the next version of Internet Explorer. Not available in any way other than as part of Longhorn. So, it's supposed to be basically a completely different style of computing. Lots of things in there, digital rights management, Palladium, which is pretty evil in my opinion, built into the hardware, built into the BIOS, built into the operating system to monitor, make sure you're not violating your operating system, make sure you're not using things you're not supposed to be doing. Does a lot of babysitting of the user. Do you think you need that? I don't think you need that. But that's what it does. And another thing is that since that court case with Microsoft being a monopoly, they've been having to share parts of their source code with their competitors for 5 years. Well, that 5 years ends in 2005. So they're going to release the operating system after they have to do the sharing, so then they don't have to do the sharing anymore. So that's part of the reason I think that the operating system was kicked back.
Yeah, well, that's a good business strategic move.
Yeah.
That was especially that, it's supposed to be a completely new style of computing. Well, there you go. Well, they've shared all this stuff that now they're going to make obsolete, or at least try to make obsolete.
Yeah, I spoke to someone, and their suggestion for it was Richard Stallman's suggestion. I listened to a few hours long of audio files of a speech he'd given, and his suggestion, which made sense to me, for Microsoft, in order to break up the monopoly, Microsoft now has brought itself into service-based businesses, offers lots of services, and you can buy into those services. He's saying that these services should be split off into their own companies, the operating system its own company, and then the operating system has to publish, like the RFCs, request for comments, like for the internet, and other hardwares and technologies and softwares and protocols, basically create a set of its own RFCs or its own system to where it gives details, technical details, about how the software works so others have the opportunity to be able to write a piece of software that's in accordance with that spec to be able to communicate with the operating system. And, you know, it sounds like a great idea to me. I mean, Microsoft can still be around. People can still be competitive. Microsoft can still innovate over its competitors if it chooses to or if it can. And, you know, now we have a free market again. The software is roaming and, you know.
Well, and then there can also be other OSs which those services can, you know, be used on.
Yeah. I wouldn't be too excited about having, you know, Microsoft services on Linux just because you won't want, you know, just running Office on it's bad enough. But, you know, that's my opinion. But, yeah, I mean, at least it's there. You have the choice. It's all about choice for the consumers. And, you know, in all honesty, that kind of decision is good for the software that, you know, the type of life cycle, the type of, you know, software situation we're in now. In 10 years, it may be a whole different ballgame. And, you know, like I said, it may not, you know, operating systems may be obsolete in some sense to where they have an operating system that does everything. Maybe it's an open source one. They have a closed source one. Whatever it is, it's there. It's available. And then they're going to be like, well, let's stop making desktops. Let's just have fiber piped to their houses and we have this network box. And they attach to that. And then, you know, the PC market's down. It's hard to get a PC in your home like it used to be. And then, you know, then it's out of your control anyways because it's somewhere else. Somebody else is watching it, monitoring it, and stuff like that. And you might even sign up for people that say, trust us, you know, look, we're one of the good guys and we don't want to do that. Maybe they are, you know, and but those are the mom and pop people. And
or that you'll have to have your fiber piped out of the country.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, here is some other things. This is straight from Microsoft Windows Security Bulletin. This is their summary for October 2003. And we're going to talk about some of their bugs really quickly. Here's their Microsoft Security Bulletin. It's MS-03-041. It's a vulnerability in authentication code. Verification could allow remote code execution. Wow. And that's available to work on, what, Windows NT Workstation 4.0, Windows Server 4.0, NT 4.0 Server, Windows 2000 Service Pack 2, 3, and 4, Windows XP Gold Edition Service Pack 1, Windows XP 64-bit Edition, Windows XP 64-bit Edition 2003, Windows Server 2003, Microsoft Windows Server 2003 64-bit Edition. Wow, that's a nice bug for all of their products. And then, okay, here. Microsoft Security Bulletin MS-03-042, Buffer Overflow in Windows Tech Troubleshooting ActiveX Control could allow code execution. Windows 2000 Service Pack 2, 3, and 4. Security Bulletin MS-03043, Buffer Overrun in Messenger Service could allow code execution. Basically, all the operating systems I mentioned before, every one of them affected. Buffer Overrun in Windows Help and Support Center could lead to system compromise. MS-03044. Millennium Edition, Server 4.0, Workstation 4.0, 2000 Service Pack 2, 3, and 4. Windows XP Gold Service Pack 1, XP 64-bit Edition, XP 64-bit Edition version 2003, Server 2003, Server 2003 64-bit Edition. And their last one, Buffer Overrun in the List Box in the Combo Box Control could allow code execution. Microsoft, basically everything I had talked about. That was a local one. Let's see, the other one was a remote. I should have mentioned that ahead of time. Remote, remote, remote. Every one of them was remote except for the last one.
Yeah, that's really secure right there.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's a product I like using.
Yeah. I trust
mm-hmm.
it.
Yep.
And, okay.
It's as holy as Swiss cheese.
Yeah. Okay, here is, from the SANS, the 20 most critical internet security vulnerabilities. And, let's see. I know there was an index. There's actually so many things printed out. Here's the biggest vulnerabilities, and I'll read them for Linux or Unix systems and for Windows systems. IIS, running that, is number one. SQL Server, Windows Authentication, Internet Explorer, Remote Access Services, MDAC, scripting host, Outlook and Outlook Express, peer-to-peer file sharing, and simple network management protocol. Those are all the bad things to worry about for Windows. Here's for Unix, Bind, RPC, Apache, Unix authentication accounts with no passwords or weak passwords. Clear text services, we're talking about Telnet, things like that. Sendmail, SNMP, SSH, NFS, NIS, and SSL. So there have been some vulnerabilities out there for the Unix community.
But the first couple of those were user problems.
Well, some of them, okay, for instance, okay, Bind. Not everyone runs Bind. RPC. Most Linux distributions don't run RPC, and everyone should know that it's scary to run RPC to begin with. It's not a very secure protocol. It's useful for what it needs to be done for, but Apache Web Server, there weren't very many for that, and it was only under certain conditions. And the Unix authentication accounts with no passwords or weak passwords, that same thing applies for Windows. If you have weak passwords or no passwords, it gets broken into.
Yeah.
Clear text services, that's talking about using Telnet, things like that, and that really sucks to use that. They're age old. Some distros enable them by default, some don't, and, you know, something you could easily correct. Some distributions, you know, ship out of the box a lot more secure than others. Sendmail. Sendmail has had a huge string of vulnerabilities over the years. I just recommend not even using it and going to something like PostFix or Qmail. And SNMP, SNMP version 1 and 2, I know for sure there's no authentication. It's not secure. SNMP version 3 that they're working on is going to have authentication. It's going to be a lot better. That, you know, allows you to monitor your network. You know, I don't know a lot of people that even run that. That even have that on by default. SSH had a hole in it recently, and that actually affected a lot of machines. It's been fixed since then. You should be using TCP wrappers to not allow certain hosts in. If you were using TCP wrappers and you didn't allow certain hosts, you allowed maybe one or two hosts or whatever, then any other host trying to get in, from my understanding, is that vulnerability didn't work, and you should be doing that by default. Misconfiguration of NFS and NIS, yeah, that's an easy thing. You know, not putting the right user accounts, passwords, limitations on NFS and NIS, network file system, and SSL. SSL has had some vulnerabilities in it, and they've been corrected, you know, much like these Microsoft vulnerabilities. The thing is that, you know, there are vulnerabilities for Unix systems, and, you know, typically, you know, they don't always ship with all these things on, and they might not be using that specific form of software. Sometimes a lot of them do ship with SSH and SSL and Apache and Sendmail, and things happen, and you got to patch it. But sometimes you may be running, sometimes you may not be running it, depending on how you have it configured. Sometimes the vulnerability doesn't work. So nothing's perfect, but it's definitely not as bad as most of the Windows stuff, to where the only prerequisite that you have to have is just have the operating system. You don't have to run certain programs. You just have to run the operating system. That's it. It's Windows.
Yeah, it's kind of like you get, you know, you set yourself up to lose in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, so right off the bat. You know, another thing, too, is that since Linux is becoming more popular, that people are going to be hunting down these exploits, because there are people out there that wanted to get in machines, plus they want to expand and see their abilities of being able to find those types of things. So it's for their own gain that happens, and their own educational experience, and maybe their own career experience. And
but at the same time, it's like if everybody just got along, all this stuff would be so much easier.
As far as what?
Oh, like, you know, just common courtesy of going, you know, that's your private stuff. I don't want to mess with it.
Well, I think that to some degree, I mean, there's a lot of politics, I think, behind why some of these, you know, exploits are made. For one reason, I think a lot of people like to actually find vulnerabilities in Microsoft, because they're sick of them being around, and they're sick of, like, you know, they want to show how bad the code base is. It's incredibly complex. It's incredibly mangled. There's lots of things going on. Linux by design, I'm not just Linux, Unix by design is more modular. It's able to have things turned on, have things turned off. Usually services are separate from one another. They don't tie into the other service, so things aren't mangled together. So it's easy to separate them. It's easier to shut them down. It's easier to modify them and change them. And you don't have some of the problems that you would in an operating system where everything's kind of merged together. And also with Unix-style operating systems, you can get down to a deeper level than you can for Windows. So, you know, there is a group of people out there that would, or I mean, there's groups of people out there and groups of individuals that want to find a Linux system, and maybe they've made their own Linux distribution, and they've made it as secure as they can as possible, with like nothing running by default, and you know, good configurations, default configurations, and then it's up to you to open those things up as you go. And some of those things may have vulnerabilities that are found eventually, and you know, a patch comes out, and that's the best you can do, because there isn't a free, there isn't a perfect you know, software out there. So, okay, now wrapping this up a little bit here towards the SCO end. It was getting quiet for a while, and it still is kind of quiet. But the interesting thing is that SCO just got $50 million in cash from an investor. I said, here you go, buddy, because they were actually getting down to the last few million. And Baystar Capital has invested $50 million in the company. It's an investment firm. Baystar leads and participates in a number of PIPEs, private investments, and public equity. Many of these deals involved investment money from other companies, including Microsoft, sources said. I don't know if Microsoft slipped them $50 million, you know?
Here, you can stay afloat for a little while longer.
Like, look, you're the only one taking the fall of doing all this pathetic crap to Linux, so we're not in the game. We might as well just give you a little bit of money to keep rolling. I don't know why anyone would give them $50 million. Do you think they're going to get the $50 million back?
Well, in other ways, yeah. No, well, whoever the investors are, we'll get it back in another way.
Well, if it's Microsoft, just saying outside of somebody that, you know, Baystar, what is Baystar's real interest, you know what I mean,
yeah,
in this case? Or in that company, do they think, oh, Baystar, maybe Baystar thinks that, oh, maybe, you know, they're going to get a lot of money with this whole licensing thing, you know? But turns out that so far they looked pretty negative in their findings. And here's something else to kind of prove that they want to keep dragging this thing out and see how much bad publicity and scaring that they can do. It's all a tactic. Here, SCO files second motion asking that Red Hat judge ask for a delay on discovery. Basically, SCO filed a motion to dismiss the action in its entirety. As you know, Red Hat has filed its answering brief. But since we last reported on this case, I'm reading straight from the article, Red Hat initiated discovery. They asked SCO for documents and for the answers of some pointed questions. IBM is forcing SCO into a corner in Utah, and Red Hat is forcibly and aggressively trying to do the same in Delaware. You'll see, I think, that we have been wasting our time telling the world the details of the story. The big picture is that Red Hat is telling SCO to prove their allegations with specificity. They have also wanted to take a look at their source code, and I'm sure that you can figure out what they want to do with it. When I tell you that they asked for the complete Linux kernel personal source code, among other products for which they have requested source code, they also want to hear some details about the relationship between Canopy and SCO, including any stock or intellectual property transfers. They want SCO to identify by title, version, modules, and lines what they think is misappropriated in any way or in violation of any of its rights. They asked for the details of Microsoft and Sun's licensing arrangement with SCO. They want to know who those 1,500 companies are that got the letter, basically the letter about using Linux and their licensing system, and what happened next. They want to know exactly what SCO has filed on a copyright on. They want all the details of SCO's source, including all of the folks who have seen the source code and have been showed under the non-disclosure agreement, and what they saw and what other contact with any Linux users about supposed liability. They want to know how they compared the Unix and Linux code to determine infringement. They want to know if they've done any comparisons of the two and what the results were. They want to know all of the stock or industry analysts SCO has met with or talked to about what is said. In short, it's like the kind of fantasy of a guy who might want a big a bully getting his at last, because they want them they asked them everything we wanted somebody to finally ask SCO and make them answer. SCO responded to Red Hat's discovery request by filing a new motion and has told the judge in a motion to stay discovery pending resolution of motion to dismiss. It would like a delay until the first motion. The motion to dismiss is ruled on. They surely don't seem to be in a hurry to get this matter resolved.
Well, so the only way, like, the the judgment to dismiss or not can really be determined until discovery happens.
I mean, come on, they want to know about the case. You can't make allegations and say, no, we can't tell you nothing, and it just sit there forever. Come on, dude. Come on.
Yeah, it's a whole ploy.
Come on.
Yeah.
What? What a bunch of crap. I mean, that's as crappy as Kill Bill, let me tell you. Let me tell you. So, you heard it. That's
yeah,
it.
I'm completely disgusted by that.
Yeah. I can just, go on whining about it. But I think that we are going to get to the end of the show. And there it is. So...
Roll credits, please.
Yeah. I don't know if you have anything else to say. If not...
Yeah, that show's been really cathartic. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
All right. Well, we're going to see everyone in 2 weeks. But before I let everyone go, I've been asking before in the past, and it's something that I really would like to do. I really would like to get more feedback from the community. I'd really like to hear more from everybody else. Obviously, I get something out of this show because I stay abreast of things and I keep up to date, and I enjoy talking to VR and all the other people that host the show. And it's a great way to spend my Sunday nights. But I also think this is for the listeners out there.
Well, hopefully we are providing a good service. And please, please, please contact us. Tell us what we can do to serve you better.
Otherwise, it'll get very bad.
Yeah, because otherwise we're just going to create this, like, strange, hegemonic, zygote of what the in the now could be or what we see it to be, and we're not really in the now. We're over somewhere in this parallel dimension of bedroom, bedroom technology freaks that just kind of live nowhere but in their own little cyber realm of nothingness.
Yes. So...
We need input.
We need your feedback now. So send your feedback to slipnet.org on the forums, or you can email me at slipmode@quest.net. That's QWEST.net. And put in the subject in the now, so we can just make it good for everybody.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Oh, that was incredibly dramatic. I really enjoyed that.
All right. Well, we'll see everybody in 2 weeks. This is your host, Slip Mode, signing out.
This is VR. Saying later.
All right. See you then.